Hi, and welcome to another edition of .NET Debugging for the Production Environment. In this episode, we're going to actually visit the testing environment, which is going to sound counterintuitive given the name of the series. But the truth is that there are some kind of tests that you have to treat like the production environment, and that you can't have any kind of invasive tools running. Otherwise, that skews the results of the test such that you can't really interpret the results, and the test is basically useless. So in this episode, I'm going to do just a quick rundown of some of the more popular kinds of application tests that are out there. And then I'll spend the bulk of the time looking at a case study of a customer issue that I worked earlier this year that deals with troubleshooting in the testing environment. And then finally, I'll put up some links on the screen here that hopefully will be able to help those of you who are going through these kinds of issues and trying to troubleshoot applications in the testing environment where you can't invasively attach a debugger or something like that. So, what are the different kinds of application tests? Well, there are lots of different kinds. I've just put up some of the more popular kinds here, and I've broken them down into two basic different groups. You've got tests that don't really deal with performance testing, and then you've got performance tests. In the non-performance testing area, you've got unit tests. Unit tests is where you take the smallest piece of executable code and you isolate it from the rest of the application and you test them on their own. And you do this to make sure that these individual units give the results that you're expecting. Integration testing is a logical extension of unit testing where you bring two or more units together and you test to see how they work together. You can even test the interface in between them to make sure it gives expected results. And then there's also regression testing, which is very popular. Anytime you make changes to existing production code, you should perform regression testing on it to make sure that any fix or enhancements that you put into production code doesn't introduce any new kinds of bugs. Typically what customers will do is they will take the original testing that they did before the fixes were made, and then they'll run those same tests against the newly changed code to make sure that they get the same kind of results that they initially got before they made changes to the code, all except for whatever bugs that they were fixing, of course. Now on to the performance tests, and this is where this episode of our series is really going to focus, performance testing. You've got load testing. What is load testing? Load testing is where you take the expected load that you expect your application to serve, and you see how it performs. You make sure that it doesn't use any more resources than it needs to, including but not limited to CPU usage, your memory footprint, response times, things like that. There are many different kinds of ways that you can determine what your expected load is. For example, if this is an ASP.NET application, one way you can determine existing load is, let's say this is you're putting out build 2 of your application. You can go into, say, the IIS logs of build 1 over the course of a week or something like that to get an idea of what kind of expected load your application is going to receive. If it's receiving 1.2 requests per second in production now, then that's what maybe you can expect for it to receive for build 2 of the application. Or let's say that you're putting out a lot of new features and it has a whole new look and you're anticipating some extra load, you may want to forecast a 20% increase, say, for example, in load. So if you've got an application that's receiving one request per second, then you may want to do load tests on all the way up to 1.2 requests per second to see how the application responds, to make sure that you're meeting any kind of SLA in terms of request execution time or request per second or whatever throughput benchmarks that you have set before you. If this is a brand new application, in other words, you don't have a build 1 out there in production right now off of which you can get perfmon data against or IIS logs if it's a web application, then there's other research that you're going to have to do to find out what your expected load may be. There are different ways that you can do this, but I won't go into those different methodologies on this particular video. And then there's also stress testing. Stress testing is very different from load testing. When load testing, you're trying to see how your application is going to respond against an expected load. Stress testing, you're putting a much heavier load against the application than what you expect to get. And you do this to see if, for example, you were going to lose the server out of rotation unexpectedly. the load that is then spread against the other existing servers in your farm, how might that react? Where's the first bottleneck going to be? Okay, is it going to be in the network? Is it going to be on the database? Is it going to be something else in the application code? Typically speaking, when I've done lab engagements with customers on stress testing, it's not uncommon for us to, some customers may want to go ahead and troubleshoot where the initial problem is going to be. Let's say it's much higher than expected CPU. Some customers decide, you know what, I want to go ahead and troubleshoot that because I really wasn't expecting that. And other customers may say, well, this is okay, I can deal with this, I don't have time to troubleshoot this now, but what I'll do is I'll just have some backup servers in place with maybe some extra CPUs, or maybe I'll just put extra CPUs, extra cores on my existing production servers. But stress testing is all about finding where that first bottleneck is. And in some cases, finding root cause and resolution for that initial bottleneck is really pretty trivial. Sometimes it can be something as easy as a config file change or some other trivial changes in the code to say, well, it's good that I ran that stress test to find out that my initial problem was, you know, here or there. It really didn't take me that long to troubleshoot it, and it was actually a bug in our code that didn't show up in load testing. So I'm glad I went ahead and ran the stress testing so that I've gotten rid of that particular bottleneck. And I've had customers continue to do this until they get into a situation to where they've got a problem that they see is either going to take quite a while to resolve, or they don't find root cause up front and they don't have the resources to dedicate to that. But their efforts in the stress testing have shown them that their application can survive adequately with a fewer than expected number of servers in play. Okay, so how do we measure the results of our application tests? We're going to focus on kind of load tests here because this is the kind of test that a lot of application developers will want to run to make sure that what I built my application for, it's actually going to be able to serve that kind of load. Generally speaking, you want to make sure that you have non-intrusive tools in play when you're measuring your stress tests. Whether that's Perfmon, and episode 2 of this series, I dedicated a whole series on how to use Perfmon to help you diagnose your application issues. It's very non-intrusive. I've been using it for years and really have yet to run up a situation in which it alone caused a problem, as long as Perfmon logs everything local and doesn't log it to a network share. If it's a web application, you can use IIS logs. Those are non-intrusive as well. As a matter of fact, it's very customary for a lot of our customers to have IIS logs logging constantly in production so that they can get an idea of what kinds of requests are coming in, how long those specific requests are taking, as well as you can even use this to IIS logs to create a nice load script that resembles production traffic. And then you can run this load script in a testing environment. The IIS logs will help give you a good blend of what requests are coming in at what kind of frequency. So are more people going to, hello, the home page as opposed to checkout, and at what frequency, something like that. Any kind of custom logs or traces that you have that you've tested before and you know that they don't interfere, they don't do a lot of I/O, so they don't interfere that much with the application, you can use those. Network traces as well, if you suspect that you might have a network issue in play, that's, those tools tend to also be very non-intrusive. Now, when you're looking at the data, whatever data you collect from that's not intrusive, it's not going to interfere with key metrics such as request per second or request execution time, CPU memory, things like that. You want to make sure that you've got a really good idea of what your application is expected to do before you interpret these results. There are some applications that I've worked on with customers to where they said, look, the 95th percentile of our requests have to come in at under 100 milliseconds. If we start getting most of our requests that take 200 milliseconds, we're going to be out of business really quick. But then I've had other customers that say, look, as long as the bulk of these requests come in under 4 or 5 seconds, it's not really that big of a deal. So you really need to know the expectations of your application in order to accurately interpret the results of the data that you've collected from your load tests. What's okay for one application is not necessarily going to be okay for another application. And then also remember the difference between stress tests and load tests. If you are looking at data that shows that you've got some kind of a bottleneck, that looks really bad and could really hamper your application. Well, if this is a stress test, the goal of your stress test may be simply to identify where that bottleneck is and not find root cause. Whereas if it's a load test, you really want to be able to troubleshoot and find root cause and resolve that problem, because with load tests, as we said earlier, you're throwing an expected load that you're going to receive in production. So you want to make sure that your application performs flawlessly under a normal load test. Okay, and now I'm going to go into a case study of an issue that I worked earlier this year with a customer that was testing their application set up for this problem. They were load testing a web application, and the results of the load test were much higher than expected CPU. And so this helped me to know what metric to focus on. We weren't looking at response times or anything like that. And when I asked them, what are your CPU numbers in production? The response was they didn't know for sure. They didn't have the numbers in front of them, but they knew that the application pool in question regularly consumed less than 10%. In their test, they showed it was actually much higher than 10%, and they wanted to find root cause. So what they did was they started perfmon first, and they got all the counters that I asked them to get. And then they started running the test, and then when it got up to this very high CPU, they said they got several dump files during the high CPU with at least 30 seconds in between the dumps. And then after that, they went ahead and they stopped the test, and then they stopped perfmon. So the perfmon log encompassed all the dumps, and the dump files, they said, were taken during high CPU, so the data was captured exactly the way that I like for it to be captured. So when I take a look at the data, the first thing I do when I troubleshoot a performance issue like this, I don't look at the dump files. I instead want to look at perfmon first. And the reason that I want to look at perfmon is several reasons. Number one, it helps me to validate what they're telling me, that CPU usage for the application pool was indeed high. It also helps me to determine what kind of CPU pattern am I seeing here. Am I seeing something that where CPU slowly grows over time, or it spikes up and stays flat, or it goes up and down and up and down? So it depends. Knowing that information from perfmon helps me to know what I'm looking for in the dump. And perfmon can also give me clues like is there a lot of time spent in GC, or maybe some other areas. That helps me to know what to focus on when I look in the dump file. So the first thing I did was I took a look at the perfmon log, and here we've got our perfmon log. When I got the perfmon log, I saw that there was more than one application pool. I didn't know which app pool to look at first, because I didn't know that they had more than one. But when I looked at this, I saw out of the four, there's they did tell me that their test started at 7:30 and it went till 9 o'clock. So knowing that, I can get rid of W3WP pound 3 here, because this guy didn't really consume any CPU during the testing until the very end, whereas the other guys, well, they have a very similar pattern. They all spike up and down repeatedly throughout the test. So I do see here CPU jumps up immediately for all three of them. I didn't ask them which pool at first I should be looking at, because the graphs for all three of these were very similar. It wouldn't be that difficult for me to find out. I could always go look at the dump files that they gave me, get the process ID from the dump files, and then in perfmon I can pull up the ID process counter from the process object and match the PID to find out which one am I supposed to focus on here, hash 1, hash 2, or the W3WP here with no hash sign at all. So one thing I noticed is that, yes, indeed, throughout the term of the test, CPU is spiking up and down. Now, some of these valleys here might be when a dump file was taken, because when you dump a process to file, process execution of that process is paused. So it's not going to be consuming any CPU. So some of these valleys here may be a result of the dump being taken of the process. Another thing that you may notice here, let's take a look at W3WP pound 1, and we covered this a little bit in episode 2 of this series. You'll notice here that the maximum CPU usage is 255%, and most people look at that and say, well, this is obviously broken. It's actually not. If you have, for example, this is a 4-core machine, so the way perfmon will measure that on this particular counter, the percent processor time, is it will go up to 400%, 100% for each core. Now, sometimes you'll get some ridiculous numbers like what you see here on this particular W3WP of 2,000%. Every once in a while, you will see some wiggy numbers in Perfmon that you can easily discard. This is one of those numbers. So now that I've looked at the CPU graphs and I see that each pool has a consistent pattern, I don't know which one I'm looking at yet because I haven't looked at the dumps, but I do see that started up right away. This is not a situation to where CPU slowly increased or to where a CPU spiked up and stayed up there, flatlined. This one jumps up and down. The next thing I want to take a look at here is some of the loads. So I'm going to take a look at the ASP.NET object and take a look at request current and request queued. And we'll add those. This helps me to see when CPU spiked in relation to when requests came in. Now, request current on IS6, which is where this test was run, is a combination of requests currently executing, requests currently in the queue, as well as requests waiting to be written back to the client. And I see here the request current. They did do some requests here at the beginning of the test to warm up the application, and that's exactly like I had asked them to do, because in production, typically customers may recycle their servers at 2 a.m. or something like that, and requests trickle in as the morning comes to help warm up the application. Some customers even have warm-up scripts to warm up their applications before they put servers back into rotation. So I see here that they did warm up the application by making a few requests before the test started, and then immediately they started jumping up. Some of these are pretty high. That one is 7. We see here 13. They get up pretty high here, some of them going past 50 requests current, which is an awful lot. And these are not, this doesn't include, remember, static pages or legacy ASP pages. These are ASPXs, any kind of ASP.NET content that's served up. So that's actually kind of a heavy load there. We'll take a look at request queued, something that I like to look at. This request by itself doesn't indicate necessarily a problem. What this counter measures is there are two basic queues in IS6. There's a machine-wide queue where when IS takes an incoming request and it hands it off from the native thread pool to an ASP.NET thread to serve the request, there's a queue for all the applications there. Then each ASP.NET application has its own queue, and this counter represents both of those queues combined. So by itself, this counter doesn't necessarily represent a problem. It sure doesn't look good in this case because I do see that there's a lot of requests queued here. In order to get a better idea of if there is a problem with a specific application, what I'll take a look at is a different counter from the ASP.NET applications object, requests in application queue, right there. This one is specific to just the application queue, not the whole machine-wide queue where IS takes an incoming request and hands it over to a managed thread pool to go ahead and handle that request. You can see I've got a lot of different ASP.NET applications here. I'm not going to look at any one particular application just yet. I don't know which one I'm going to be troubleshooting, so I'll take a look at the total instance to see if there's anything there of interest before I go on and delve deeper into individual applications. When I take a look at this one, I see that the maximum here is 0. So at no time was there any particular application queue that had requests inside the application specific queue. So I'll go ahead and delete that counter and reduce some clutter on Perfmon log. So what I see now is verify that there is a high CPU problem. Just to recap, the pattern of CPU usage is spiky. It goes up and down. It doesn't flatline. It doesn't grow slowly. It spikes up pretty quick. And this coincides with when requests are actually being executed on the server. And I see that in some cases, the number of requests current here mimics some of these CPU spikes, and sometimes it doesn't. This may help determine which particular ASP.NET application or which application pool is drawing some of the more CPU or taking some more of the load. We could always, like I said, delve further into that using some of the ASP.NET application specific counters. But right now, the way I troubleshoot data is I like to start out kind of in a big picture and then focus in on the smaller picture as best I can. There's another counter that I like to put up here. It's one of my favorite counters when I'm troubleshooting ASP.NET applications. It is the request per second counter, because this is a key counter when it comes to measuring your load, how many requests are coming in. A lot of customers I work with, they test, they want to know how many users can we simulate, how many users can my site handle. In reality, you don't care. It doesn't matter. I'm one user, but if I sit here and I hold down the F5 key on my browser, you care about that a lot more than you care about one user just sitting there requesting one page. Request per second is really the metric, or one of the key metrics that you want to take a look at when you're measuring load. So once again, I'll use the total instance here rather than try to delve in on any of these 11 different applications. And we'll see what requests per second takes a look like. Now, before we look at it, I want to tell you that based on my experience, and it's a lot of experience in looking at web applications, for ASP.NET content, any application that averages, say, 3 to 5 requests per second every second throughout the day is a very, very busy application. Again, we're not including static content, just ASP.NET. 3 to 5 requests per second is very, very busy. So knowing that, let's see what we get here for total. And again, this is total on this server where they were complaining of high CPU usage by their particular application pool. And we see here that there are 3 that are suffering from high CPU. And then when we look at requests per second, we note their scale here is an even 1. And we're already spiking up to above 20 and 30. It looks like a sustained usage here all the way over till about somewhere between 830 and 840 when the request per second dip. That may be where they took one of the dumps. Pretty much we are sustaining a request per second above 30, which is huge, monstrous in my experience. So right about this time is when I get a little suspicious of the test itself. Not so much of how the application is responding to it, but the test itself. A lot of applications, if you slam it with load, with way more load than it is ever expected to get, it's going to take up a lot of CPU because the server is working very hard to service those requests. So once I saw this, I went back and I talked to the developers, or actually some of the server admins, and I said, can you guys pull a perfmon log from production last week where for this particular application, these application pools? And this customer, they always keep a rolling log, a historical log of perfmon logs. They keep 3 or 4 days on hand. So they were able to get me perfmon logs from a few of the different production servers from the previous week. And when I took a look at them, what I saw was a very different load than what we see here. What I saw was not requests per second of 20, 30, 40, or 50. What I saw was, in this particular test, we average 27. If I take off some of this blank space over here, probably going to be above 30. So when I took a look at their production log during the work day and measured requests per second, the load test that they did here that's represented by this perfmon had a request per second that is anywhere from 4 to 10 times the load that they had in production. And if you remember earlier when I was talking about load tests, especially if you're coming out with a new version of the website or having a lot of new features, you may anticipate extra load, and some customers may, in their load testing, not throw on 100% of load based on what they see now in production, but maybe 120, maybe even 130%. In this case, this particular test was throwing anywhere between 4 to 10 times the load that their production servers saw. Now, again, this also, I want to keep in mind one thing I said earlier about knowing what kind of tests that you are investigating. If this is a stress test, I might take a look and say, well, your initial constraint here is CPU. There's no queuing in the application-specific queues. You're able to execute those requests without them having to queue, but you're using a ton of CPU. How do you want to proceed? Do you want to just say, okay, that's that, and maybe we won't add more cores, or we won't spread out by adding more servers in the farm, or do you want to investigate that? No, in this case, it was a load test, so we knew we couldn't just identify a bottleneck or a problem and go on. But once we found out that the load was way higher than expected, that enabled us to say, okay, now this really doesn't look right. The application may be fine, but the load looks way off. So what I asked them to do was go back in testing and put on a reasonable load based off of their production servers where they were getting something much closer to 2 or 3 requests per second. How did the application respond then in terms of CPU and whatever other metrics that they had to measure? I asked them to do that and then never heard back, which is not too uncommon when you're in support because, like I've said before, and I tell customers, working in support for a lot of my career, I have yet to have a customer just call me up and say, how's it going in your world? There's usually a reason they call because something broke. then if I tell them to go back and change something to fix it, and I don't hear back from them, it's almost always because they fixed whatever problem that they had. Maybe they had another fire to fight or something like that. But in this case, I told them to tone down their load to give it a more realistic load compared to what they see in production. Never heard back from them. And then then what I heard after a couple weeks was that the application went into production successfully with no issues. So there are some other resources here that I wanted to show everyone. The first link up here, this is a paper that I've shown before in this series, and it's a great resource. It is not a new resource. The paper's been up there for quite some time, but even so, it's very, very helpful. Even when going to IS7, the details on a lot of those perfmon counters have not changed, and I still use that paper quite frequently. Thomas Marquardt wrote that paper. He also wrote one on ASP.NET thread usage, comparing what you have in IS6 to IS7 and IS7.5. That's a great, great resource to take a look at to understand some of the changes that have been made in IS7. So if you're doing any migration, or if you've recently undergone some migration to IS7 or 7.5 and you're experiencing some problems, you want to check out that paper and learn about the threading model differences. Really, really helpful. And then finally, another link there that will help give some guidance on performance testing for web applications. Thanks for joining another edition of .NET Debugging for the Production Environment.